You're listening to The Environment Show, and I'm Peter Burling. Still ahead. Green architecture usually refers to environmentally sound buildings for people to live and work in. We meet a visionary who thinks beyond buildings and integrates whole ecosystems in urban environments. Stay with us. As you listen to this program, there's an architect somewhere in the world designing a new public works project. Do you think that person is taking the environmental effects of his or her project into consideration? Maybe not. Green architecture is catching on, but it's a slow process. For the past 30 years, however, one woman has been combining art with architecture to help improve the natural world and to help people appreciate it. Many consider her architectural design to be revolutionary and believe she is setting a new standard. The Environment Show's Stephen Westcott has this profile of Patricia Johansson and her work.
Even as an undergraduate art student in Vermont in the early 1960s, Patricia Johansson was thinking about environmental design, combining nature and ecology with art and architecture. After graduation, these ideas turned into actions when she came to the realization that she wanted her artwork to do more for the world than simply take up wall space in some millionaire's home. She continued her education, obtaining degrees in architecture and civil engineering in New York City, and for the past 3 decades, this artist and sculptor has been designing magnificent pieces of work that not only are easy on the eyes, but on the environment as well. It's known as hybrid art. In the late 1960s, Patricia began designing gardens. She started her first big project in 1970, which was a series of paths through a mixed forest in upstate New York. The paths allowed people to access nature without disturbing the landscape. That first design was followed by a number of large projects around the world.
Well, basically, they're very large structures that are sculptural, but then I also restore whole ecosystems depending on where they are. And one of my favorite things to do is put these in the middle of cities so that people who have never been able to come in contact with the kinds of things that I did as a child, just walking across a creek on a log or looking at a frog or a salamander, these are experiences that most urban dwellers simply don't have. And so part of the strategy is to put a swamp in the middle of a city, which is what I did in Dallas, then give people access to these environments so that people will grow up loving and appreciating the things that really no longer exist in cities.
Johansson is referring to her first urban project that took place in Dallas, Texas. Today it's referred to as the Leonhardt Lagoon. Construction began in 1981, and it was completed in 1986.
I was invited to come there by Harry Parker, who was the director of the Dallas Museum of Art. And basically, what the Dallas project was it was a flood basin for the Trinity River. It was like the kinds of sumps that we have with chain link fences around them. And he described it as Dallas's old mud hole. And he said, "Do you think you can do something with this?" And I said, "Yes." And basically, the lagoon is 18 feet deep. And what I've done is put sculpture out there that allows people to walk out on pathways over the lagoon and experience the microhabitats that I worked on with the Dallas Museum of Natural History.
The walkways at each end of the lagoon are in the shapes of native Texas plants. Their leaves are the paths that people can walk on to experience the aquatic ecosystem up close. The bridges at the northern end of the wetland area also prevent erosion. This endeavor led to a similar project along the San Francisco shoreline. In 1992, Johansson undertook a project in Óbidos, Brazil. Park for a Rainforest is a series of green walkways that branch out into the shape of a Brazilian plant that wind around the trees. Visitors can walk from the ground level to 150 feet in the air, enabling them to see iguanas, tree frogs, king vultures, and many other plant and animal species without disturbing the ecosystem.
When you go to the Amazon, it's really, you don't really see very much on the ground. You have to get up above the level of the ground to actually experience all of the life within the rainforest. And so, the other thing that I'm very interested in, and I don't always tell people this, is that it's very frightening. And I think that's important. If you've ever done something like walk across a suspension bridge, one of the Roebling bridges, and it begins to sway. And so what I want people to understand is that we aren't all powerful, we aren't the center of the universe. And when people actually get up there, they are in a different world. It's no longer human controlled. There are many things that would be quite dangerous. And I think this is important, that we can't have a Disney world, that we can't necessarily clean it all up, that you do have to enter other worlds and experience them for what they are and not wipe them out.
In 1994, Johansson began another environmental art project, this time outside of Boston, Massachusetts. She was hired by the state's Cultural Council to help renew the city of Brockton, economically as well as environmentally and aesthetically. She says her focus there was to help reconnect a city that had become fragmented, like so many urban areas that have lost plants, animals, and wetland areas to development.
Part of the theory of this project was to develop a network of green streets that would actually be forested. And where they come in contact with the major traffic arteries, and it's only really at three points, there are arboreal crossings, and then there are tunnels under the road to give these animals a chance. Then, of course, the waterways should all be daylighted. There are 30 miles of brooks that run through Brockton. Nobody is even aware of this. There are certain areas that are quite beautiful with natural banks, and this should all be made available as a linear public park. So that's what I've designed. We call it the Rocky Marciano Trail because this is Rocky's hometown. Basically, it parallels Rocky's running route. And Rocky was very involved in the environment. People don't realize this. He writes about picking mushrooms, picking dandelion greens. He spent a lot of time in the forest. He spent a lot of time running through the parks. So this was very important to him. And, of course, it's been lost, but it can be regained.
Johansson is also involved in a project designed to help restore the Nairobi River in Kenya, Africa. There, she is constructing a natural filtration system filled with wetland plants and microorganisms that will help purify the water that for years has been polluted by industrial releases as well as human and animal waste. It will provide better habitats for wildlife and nourishment to nearby residents. The bright-eyed, soft-spoken artist downplays her role as a revolutionary in the field of green architecture and design. She says the main reason more architects and businessmen do not practice green architecture is because they have budgets and are looking at the bottom line. The award-winning architect says our focus is too often on human needs rather than the health of the planet. I asked Johansson whether she sees herself as an artist who loves nature or a nature lover who loves architecture.
Well, I think, first of all, I'm a person and a citizen, and I think this is really important because we have to see where we connect with everybody else. And I think the real issues here are health and survival. If we look at them in those terms, then we're no longer talking about rich and poor. We're no longer talking about ethnic groups. We're no longer pitting the forest people against the lumberjacks. What we're saying is that we all breathe the air. We all drink the water. None of us want cancer. None of us really want to see nature wiped out. No matter who you are, it's a joy to see a butterfly or to see a small animal. And so I think we have to look at the issues in different ways.
The fact that our relationship to the planet is first and foremost biological is something that often gets lost in the conference rooms and blueprints of developers and architects. But for Patricia Johansson, it is the foundation for her work. For The Environment Show, I'm Stephen Westcott.
Thanks for being with us on this week's Environment Show. I'm Peter Burley. Environmentalist Hazel Wolf taught us to be skeptical about both big corporations and the government. But she also thought both could be educated with respect to climate change and genetic engineering. As you watch the Coreopsis bloom, listen to this show again. It's number 528. You can order it at 1-800-323-9262. The Environment Show is a national production which is solely responsible for its content. Alan Shartok is executive producer, Stephen Westcott is producer, and the show is made possible by the W. Alton Jones Foundation, the William Bingham Foundation, the Turner Foundation, the J.M. Kaplan Fund, and Hemmings Motor News, the monthly Bible of the collector car hobby. www.hemmings.com. be good to the Earth, and join us next week for the Environment Show.